It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And let me start off by saying happy Easter to all of you. I hope you have a great Easter weekend and a great Easter Sunday, wherever you might be. 250 years ago, Paul Revere made his ride. And since it was one of the great outdoor rides of all time, I thought I would start off this Easter Sunday show by simply saying, think where we might be in America if it hadn't been for Paul Revere's ride 250 years ago, warning the Continental Army, which was at its infancy, that the British are coming. This morning's show, I'm going to talk about an individual who passed away this week who most of you listening have never heard of, but all of you listening, he had an impact on your lives. His name was Jim Scheer. Jim Scheer was a dear friend of mine. Part of the reason I'm hosting you here on the Great Outdoors Show, as I was introduced to Jim Scheer by Bill Cullerton, of course, who was legendary predecessor to me on the Great Outdoors Show and just simply one of the greatest conservationists and outdoor individuals the world has ever known. Jim Scheer, an Illinois native. No, actually, he wasn't. He would be really mad at me if I called him an Illinois native. Jim Scheer was born in Hayward, Wisconsin, raised in Hayward, Wisconsin. Jim Scheer moved to Illinois early in his life and made Illinois his home. He was a hunter. He was a trapper. He was a fisherman. He was a conservationist, and he was a visionary. And when he passed away in his 90s this week, it made me realize that once again, we don't know a lot of the people who shaped the world that we live in for conservation. They never saw credit. Jim Scheer never sought credit for anything he did, and yet he literally transformed the face of conservation in Illinois. And those of you listening, whether you're in Illinois, Wisconsin, or wherever you might be this morning, there are individuals in your states that have done the same kind of things that Jim Scheer did, never sought any publicity for it. They just wanted to get the job done. Jim Scheer was one of those guys who made the world a better place. And while he absolutely loved to take people on if they weren't doing the right thing that he thought was right, he had a heart of gold. And he also, as I said a moment ago, he was a visionary. You could count on Jim to do the right thing for conservation. And one of the things he did for Illinois, and actually the country, he instituted the state duck stamp program. In the early 70s, he went to the Illinois legislature and said, Illinois needs a state duck stamp. He did this with Gaylord Donnelly and a few others. Illinois was one of the formative states in having a state duck stamp program. And tens of millions of dollars have now been raised for conservation in Illinois and on the prairies of Canada as a result of Jim Scheer. Eventually, Illinois would have had a duck stamp because every state has a duck stamp. But Jim Scheer was the one who led and said very early on, we need one. Duck hunters in Illinois need to help the ducks in Canada. We need to help the wetlands in Illinois. And he and Tony Dean, Gaylord Donnelly, and a few others, they got the State Duck Stamp Act passed, and then they formed the State Duck Stamp Committee, which I appeared before many, many times, and longtime friend of mine, Dick Schrader, has been on that committee for years, as has many people. The Duck Stamp Committee is one of those things, every state has them now, but in Illinois, that changed the face of conservation for wetlands and for waterfowl. So Jim Scheer did that. He also did something extraordinary. He got together with Chuck Urban, another individual that never sought the limelight. Most people have never heard of unless you had the pleasure of sharing a duck blind with him or a story with him. Chuck Urban was one of the people who uncovered the hen house, as we call it today. It was called the Mallard Nesting Structure in Ohio. Chuck Urban was a great friend of Jim Scheer's. Jim said to him, we ought to make these things, and we ought to send them to Canada so hen mallards have a place to nest and can avoid the jaws of predators and can avian, as well as can avoid ground nesting marauders, raccoons, coyotes, skunk, weasels, mink, etc. So the hen house, as it's now called, of which there are tens and tens of thousands of these cylinder structures all over the prairies, this is a result of really one man leading it, Jim Scheer, building off the idea of a great friend of his from Ohio, Chuck Urban, getting together with another person who never sought the limelight, Fred Keck. And lo and behold, we have hen houses all over. And it's a story I want to take a moment to talk about. I talked about it a few years ago, but it's really a story of how private citizens make a huge difference. So the hen house was this cylinder. It's up on a pipe. It's a round cylinder. It's open at both ends, and it's filled with straw. In the early 1990s, Jim Scheer had a farm near Joliet, and he had a big barn. And he got together with friends of his and their kids, and all winter long, they made these structures, and they filled them with hay, and they bound them, and they sat there. I think there were 600 of these that were made during the winter of, I think it was 1991 or 92. But they had no way to get them to Canada. Fred Keck, who was the founder and president of Guaranteed Air Freight, said, "I'll get them to Canada." And he sent a semi-truck to Jim Scheer's farm, and we loaded that whole thing up to the absolute brim with hen houses. John Huzar, the Chicago Tribune, wrote an article about it at the time. Bill Cullerton had me on the Great Outdoor Show to talk about it, and Fred Keck took off to Canada with a driver to deliver the hen houses to the Delta Waterfowl Foundation at the Delta Marsh, and they were to put these hen houses up. Well, of course, they arrive at the border of Canada, and the Canadian Customs says, "What do you have in there?" And they said, "Well, we got these duck nesting cylinders. This guy Jim Scheer calls them hen houses." And they said, "Well, you can't bring those into Canada. They're grass. You know, they haven't been through customs. You know, their duties or tariffs." So they sat there for a couple of weeks at the border. And Jim Scheer got a hold of the Delta Waterfowl Foundation, as is today known. And they got a hold of the Premier of Manitoba. And Jim Scheer had a direct conversation with the Premier of Manitoba saying that these were to help the ducks, and they were built by American duck hunters, and that they were going to be the beginning of a program, and they'd be all manufactured in Canada eventually, but for right now they had to come in from the United States. And I can just hear Jim Scheer, and those of you who knew him, you can just hear that conversation Jim Scheer might have had. It would have been salty, and it would have been forthright, and it got the job done. Next thing you know, the Premier of Manitoba issued a scientific permit for these hen houses to come across the border and go to the Delta Waterfowl Foundation, where they were unloaded and they were erected by scientists and farmers on the prairies. And that is the beginning of what is today known as the Hen House Program, which is part of the Million Duck Campaign, which is part of bringing back mallards who are so threatened by predators on the prairies. It started out with an idea from Chuck Urban, Jim Scheer's intuitiveness and his ability to pull people together, building these in his barn in out Joliet, Illinois, shipping them with Fred Keck to Canada, and lo and behold, we have one of the great conservation success stories, really, in all of waterfowl conservation as a result of this man. So when you think about people who have done things for conservation, it's hard to think of many people that I've known, at least, who've done more for Jim Scheer, not with his money necessarily, but with his will and his wisdom. Lots of people give money to conservation. Jim Scheer was an idea guy, and he gave plenty of money too. He was tenacious in his ability to raise money. If Jim Scheer called you to raise money for Ducks Unlimited or Delta Waterfowl, or if he wanted you to contribute to the muskies of the world in restocking muskies, you didn't have a choice but to say yes. But he really was an idea guy. And he was a person who put his, you know, he put his shoulder to where his beliefs were, and he actually did things. He got things done. So we have lost in the conservation world. We have lost someone that really helped pioneer conservation in the latter part of the 20th century in areas that others hadn't thought of. Duck stamps, hen houses, habitat, conservation easements. He was one of those individuals who made America a better place, and he especially made Illinois a better place. And he sure loved Hayward, Wisconsin, and his muskie fishing. He was a great hunter. He loved to fish. He was a trapper. But most of all, he was a conservationist and a visionary. So he'll be missed. There aren't a lot of Jim Scheers left, and certainly from a generation that took conservation to the next level. The boards he served on and the friendships he made, he's the kind of individual who made this world a better place. I'll be back with much more when I come back after the break. We're going to talk a little bit about a new conservation organization called Nature is Nonpartisan, an interesting story, and probably builds on the work of Jim Scheer. and others who also believed nature was nonpartisan, and they worked across the aisle in a time when you could do that to get things done. It wasn't Republican politics. It wasn't Democratic politics. It was people who wanted to do the right things for conservation. So happy Easter to you all. I'll be back in just a moment. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio on this Easter Sunday. I touched on the 250-year-ago ride of Paul Revere, which probably saved the problem. There may not have even been a Continental Army if Paul Revere hadn't made his famous ride out of Boston, warning the British were coming. Obviously, you heard me talk about Jim Scheer, but there are lots. No, actually, there aren't lots of Jim Scheers. There are a number of people across the country who had the tenacity and the foresight and the drive to do the kind of things that Jim Scheer did. And we're fortunate in Illinois to have had our disproportionate share. We're better off as a state for it. We might be better off because there's an organization that's just been founded, which has an interesting name. Nature is nonpartisan. And when I saw this, and I saw who was heading it up, a guy by the name of Ben Cassidy, who I've known of for years, I thought this is a particularly interesting time to launch an organization called Nature is Nonpartisan. I've believed nature is nonpartisan all of my life. I've been able to, while I happen to have been appointed by Republican governors in Illinois to various commissions, I've been working with Democrats and Republicans and independents, and it really doesn't matter who, for a long time, as many people have, and many of you have listening, to get the right things done, whether it was conservation, medical, whatever it might have been. But in the conservation world today, we are indeed really partisan. And I've never partook in that. I don't believe in it. I think the nature is nonpartisan. So this organization has started. I don't know how it's going to fare. And that's really not the purpose of my talking about today. My purpose is here on Easter Sunday to talk about coming together for the good of conservation. And that's what Ben Cassidy and Nature is Nonpartisan is going to do. He points out that in the beginning, conservation, well, was actually started by, really, you really have to believe it was started by Teddy Roosevelt, a Republican to begin with. But then as conservation evolved over time, people of all stripes became involved, Republicans, Democrats, it didn't matter. But today, that's not the case. You are either an environmentalist, which generally means that you tend to be more for regulation and more for government control, which tends to be that you're more likely to tilt towards the Democratic Party. And there's conservation, which believes in the wise use of our natural resources. That's the foundation upon which Teddy Roosevelt built the conservation movement. Those individuals tend to be more conservative. They tend to believe in less regulation and less government, and they tend to be more Republican. So we now are polarized. The environmental movement, as you call it, is a movement that I've often said has been hijacked by extreme interests. The poster child of it being Greenpeace, Sierra Club, Defenders of Wildlife, Earth Justice, organizations that are very litigious and not habitat-oriented, and conservation groups led by Ducks Unlimited, Nature Conservancy, Delta Waterfowl, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Safari Club International, etc., tend to be more habitat focused, and they tend to be more conservative Republican groups. So we have this tilt. Environmentalism tends to be for the left. Conservation tends to be for the right. And they're not talking to each other. The last time there was a serious effort to have a nonpartisan group, it was led by Jim Range in the early, about 25 years ago. He created something called the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership, on whose founding board I served, along with Matt Conley and a number of individuals. And it truly was nonpartisan. I went to the first board meeting, and you had Congressman John Dingell of Michigan sitting there, and you had very conservative Republican congressmen sitting there. And it was an effort, bipartisan, to get things done. That worked well for a while until, unfortunately, TRCP decided that they needed to align with what happened to be at the time. After Jim Range passed away, they aligned more with the Obama White House, and immediately it became tainted as being partisan instead of nonpartisan, and it lost a lot of its credibility. So whether this organization now, Nature is Nonpartisan, can truly build a coalition that is going to work from both sides for the good of conservation, that we're going to have to see. I think it's a very heavy lift for Ben Cassidy. Ben Cassidy comes from a background which someone might look at and say, aha, see, he's not nonpartisan. He comes from a background of having worked for the NRA, National Rifle Association, having worked for Safari Club International, and they would say, what's nonpartisan about that? Both of those organizations are heavily biased towards the Republican Party. It doesn't mean Ben Cassidy is, but it means that everybody carries their own weight. And I could say from my personal point of view, even though I've served under Republican governors in Illinois, and I've served on advisory boards appointed by Republican governors, I may be painted as, see, he's one of them. He's not one of us. It doesn't matter who appoints you. It's a matter of how you live your life. And Ben Cassidy, I think, is going to try very hard to emulate what Jim Range did, which is to make conservation nonpartisan and to get the extremism out of it. The environmental movement was the conservation movement in America until it was hijacked. We've got to bring it back together. And I wish Ben all the success in the world. He's going to have a terribly hard time doing this. But for those of you listening who believe that really conservation is not about whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent or whatever you might be, it's about making the world a better place. A guy like Ben Cassidy and his new organization have the chance of doing that. So I wish them well, and I wish all of you a very happy Easter. Next week when I come back, I'm going to talk about the Everglades. I just returned from a visit there. It's astounding what's happening. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.